everybody. This is Charles Davis from the Be Happy podcast here for a wonderful episode. Today, I've got a special guest who I've only recently met. In fact, we just kind of met in person before we started recording here on the podcast. Her name is Anne-Marie Wells, and I'm going to introduce her in just a moment. Before that, please, if you could go down below and click on or whatever and subscribe to the podcast. That would really help. It helps us with, some sort of algorithms or something like that. But it really helps with you getting it every week and other people getting it every week and being a little bit happier in their lives. And so this week, I'm really excited because Anne-Marie has got a little bit of a different point of view or a different angle that she's going to come in on happiness about. Anne-Marie reached out to me. I'm assuming she found my podcast or found my website somewhere and reached out to me through that. Anne-Marie Wells, she's the founder and host of The Joy of Poeting. She's an award-winning author or writer with 3 traditionally published books, Survived by a memoir in verse and other poems, Mother as a Verb, and her children's books, Mummy, Why Am I a Bird? She also is got a book that she's been working on, is going to get published, Happy Iceland. It's a travel memoir. And she describes it as a vibrant mix of Amy Schumer's wit in The Girl with the Lower Back Tattoo and the heartfelt storytelling of Brandon Stanton's Humans of New York. Happy Iceland chronicles her journey to escape the doldrums of life and fulfill a dream of traveling to Iceland. And I'm just so excited to welcome Anne-Marie Wells to the podcast. Anne-Marie, welcome. What did I miss?
Hi, Charles. Thank you so much for having me. Well, I would love to talk about the origins of this travel memoir and how it came to be at all. I ended up traveling to Iceland for my 30th birthday. At 29, I was on the precipice of this big life event, transitioning into my 30s. And I was watching a lot of my friends get married. I saw a lot of them building careers, excelling in their careers. And I wasn't finding my forever love. I wasn't finding my dream job. I was going from one entry-level job to the next. And I had this dream of traveling to Iceland, but never, well, first I didn't have the funds to do it. I had spent a number of years saving money with the hopes that I would eventually go without any expectation that I would go for my 30th birthday. But when I was 29 and I was working as a nanny under the table and not using my degree, I had a master's degree in ecology and not doing anything with that, not for lack of trying either. I was applying to jobs left and right, but not getting them, or the jobs that I was finding were internships, temporary, seasonal, not those full-time jobs with the benefits that we all need. And so I was working under the table as a nanny and was in another relationship that was going nowhere. And I just had this epiphany that I needed to get out of this rut. I was going to finally go to Iceland. I was going to go for my 30th birthday. I was going to use the money that I had saved up now. Even if it's not the amount that I wanted to save, I'm going to go now. And I bought my ticket the next day and spent most of that savings on the ticket itself. And I'm not a stranger to travel, so I have done some traveling in my past. I was a foreign exchange student to France when I was in high school. And then I did my graduate program in Portugal. And during that time, I also spent a summer in Catalonia, Spain. I traveled to all these places by myself. I also had backpacked the National Scenic Trail that runs through Florida. It runs from the Everglades in the southern tip to Pensacola in the Panhandle. I went with a friend, so I didn't do that by myself. But I learned a lot of things about traveling, how to be savvy, how to travel lightweight. While I was backpacking through Florida, I met a lot of people who had more experience than my friend Liz or I had. And they taught us how to sleep under a tarp instead of a tent, because the tent poles are so heavy. You can use your back or your hiking pole as a tent pole. And all of these little tips and tricks, instead of having a formal camp stove, we had one that was made out of a cat food can. And instead of having to carry these canisters of fuel that were very heavy, we used antifreeze and just put it in the cat food can. We could boil a pot of water, and it was just enough to make instant rice, instant oatmeal, instant coffee, that kind of thing. How to be more Spartan in our accommodations. And all of that knowledge I used for this trip. So when I left for Iceland, I didn't make any hotel reservations. I didn't rent a car. Instead, I backpacked and hitchhiked everywhere I went. And wherever I found myself at night, I rolled myself up in my sleeping bag and my tarp, just kind of off to the side, trying to find some shelter if there was any. And I did that for 5 weeks. And before I left, maybe about a month before I left, I was in my bed at night and I had this idea that I was going to determine where I was traveling to in the country by asking strangers about the happiest places, or the places where their happiest memories took place. I didn't know what those stories were going to be or where they would take me. But wherever that place was, I would do everything I could to try and find that place where that memory took place. So when I walked out the doors of the airport, I looked around and I saw a lot of tourists. So I didn't want to ask tourists. I wanted to make sure that I was asking Icelandic locals about their memories in Iceland specifically. And I saw a random airline worker off to the side on a cigarette break, and I walked up to him and said, hi, I'd like to ask you a question. And I'm sure he was thinking that I was going to ask him for directions or something about the airport or taxis or something like that. But instead I said, can you tell me about a time you felt really happy? And he kind of just laughed cutesily, you know, like, oh, who's this girl with pigtail braids and a tattered rain jacket and this giant backpack on her back with her trekking poles and everything. But he ended up telling me about camping with his friends and family in a place called Vestmannaeyjar. And I didn't really have time to ask him any follow-up questions because he was just like, all right, gotta go, and boogied back into the airport. As I'm taking notes, I had a notebook with me, a pocket-sized notebook that I brought around so I could document everything that was happening. And I did have a map. This was in 2016, so I had a smartphone. It was an iPhone 4, very primitive compared to nowadays. And I didn't have a chip or a SIM card that was international. So I didn't have phone service. I only could use the internet if I was in a place that had Wi-Fi. And so I didn't have GPS to navigate. I only had my map, my folding map, like back in the day. And so I found Vestmannaeyjar on the map. I was surprised to find out that it had a J in it. I didn't anticipate the spelling of all of these words. But then I discovered that this place that his happiest memories happened was an island off of the south central coast of Iceland. And in order to get there, I would have to find a ferry to cross over the water to get to this island. And I just started out on the road with my thumb out, making sure I was on the right route. And it took me a couple of days to get there, but I finally made it. And from there, I found another stranger, asked her about her happiest memories, and so on and so forth in this domino effect of finding one location, then finding another stranger. And I didn't really have expectations as to what stories I would be told or where I would end up in the country. I was hoping that I would be in all corners, and that's more or less what happened. I did find myself in all of these locations, some of them very remote. I found auto mechanics, childhood basketball courts from when he was in high school, and he felt really happy playing basketball with his friends. I found two 12-year-old girls that I happened to meet randomly. I asked them about their happiest memories. They told me about growing up in the suburbs of Reykjavik, and they would play hide and go seek in their shared backyard. I went to go find their old neighborhood from when they were even littler than they were at 12 years old. I found a woman's childhood farm where she would go visit her aunt and uncle for the summers on summer vacation between the school years. I found a place where a woman went horseback riding, and just kind of these, I don't want to say basic, but really not very extraordinary events, most of them. I found a cafe where a couple said they felt really happy the night before having a nice dinner. They had picked me up as I was hitchhiking, and I asked them about their happiest memories. And the wife said, "Oh, well, we just felt really happy having dinner at that cafe we were at yesterday. Didn't you feel happy at that cafe?" "Oh, yes, yes. I felt very happy at that cafe." And so I went to go find that cafe where they ended up having dinner. I met a random gentleman again, just when I end up at the next happy place, meeting another stranger, and I asked him about his happiest memories. He said, "I felt really happy this morning watching my son dive into the pool for the first time." And so I went to go find the public pool where he watched his son dive into the water for the first time. And I collected 12 different happy places over the course of these 5 weeks. And of course, I had side quests in between. I had side adventures. Sometimes somebody would pick me up and they would say, "Oh, yeah, I can bring you there, but we're going to go see this waterfall first. Do you want to come with us?" And yeah, of course I do. Of course I want to go see the waterfall with you. The journey or the adventure was in the journey and not necessarily the individual places I ended up. So I had all of these side adventures in between as well, and ended up making close friends that I still speak to today, and I'm still friends with them, and they are supporting me. I keep telling them, I'm still working on that book. I'm still trying. I'm still trying to get it published, and I haven't given up. But yeah, I felt like this experience that I had was so extraordinary. I wasn't a writer before this happened. I went to school for ecology, like I told you, and right. was trying to find a job in environmental science or doing field research and things like that. And then suddenly, as I was on the plane coming home after having this 5 week long journey that brought me to the North Fjords and seeing glaciers and meeting all people from around the world, not just Iceland, but people from Australia, from Jordan, from France, from South America, from everywhere, just all walks of life. Everyone who had an open enough heart to pick up a stranger hitchhiking on the side of the road. And I said to myself on the plane, "Oh, no, now I have to learn how to write because I have to turn this into a book."
Right.
But I did. I started from the ground up and started just asking my friends who I knew were writers what books I needed to read, what classes I needed to take, what YouTube videos I needed to watch, and really started from the ground up. So this has been a, wow, 8.5 year journey. And in between, I published 2 collections of poetry. I've won awards. I've written plays that have been staged and published in literary journals. I have, I went back to school, got a degree in English. I've done so much with writing as a result, and still haven't let go of this dream. I believe in it. I believe in it. I know that it will find a home someday. People are interested in this story, like you. You're interested in this story, and I think it can be an inspiration to other people who might feel like they are also in a rut, that they're also not finding happiness, and maybe wondering the way that I did, what's wrong with me? Why am I not figuring it out? Why am I watching everyone around me seemingly figuring it out, but I'm still struggling? And one of the practices that I've taken with me since Iceland, because I noticed that the majority of these stories were not these extraordinary moments. When I asked people about their happiest memories, nobody said, oh, when I got this raise at work. Nobody even said, oh, my wedding day, or these, you know, very momentous moments in their life. They focused mostly on their child diving into the pool, the nice meal that they had at the cafe the day before, playing hide and seek together as kids. And so the practice that I've taken away from that is that every day before I go to bed, my husband and I do it together. We call it doing delights, where we go through and spend two or three minutes talking about what delighted us that day. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is not these momentous things. Of course, the day my son was born, that was a delightful day. But just yesterday, what was delightful about yesterday? Oh, we, had a nice meal. We have this bird feeder that we have suction cupped to our back door. And so we can see the birds coming in and feeding on the bird feeder, and a squirrel got into it. And so we were looking at the squirrel through the window, and that was delightful. Other minimal things that just happened during the day that we just focus our attention on. And sometimes it's delightful that I checked the mail and we didn't have any bills. That delighted me that day. And of course, we have an almost 1-year-old son, and almost everything that he does is delightful. Watching him discovering new things. When he was learning how to use a straw, oh my gosh, I don't know if I've laughed so hard in my life was watching him learn how to use a straw. It was just so sweet watching him, and he was getting water all over the place. Just little moments like that they don't have to be this momentous occasion or event of delight. Oftentimes when we travel together as a family, we just say, I'm delighted that we got home and there were no crazy drivers and no accidents and, things like that. I was delighted when I went grocery shopping and the cashier was making funny faces at my son. That was delightful to me. Or we went out to dinner with friends who were in town, and the server brought a little like gummy bear candy for my son. And I just thought that was so sweet. He's like, oh, can he have a candy? I was like, oh, sure. It was just so sweet, you know, and just focusing my attention on those little details has definitely helped my perpetual malaise of feeling like I'm doing something wrong. I don't know why I'm so unhappy. And I think I was focusing my attention on everything that was going wrong, that everything I didn't have. It does help that I have my forever love now, because definitely being in the dating scene, there's a little to find delight in. So I'm definitely delighted that that I have such a wonderful partner to share my life with now. And that certainly adds to my happiness, my regular happiness. But that's not to say that our lives have always been, since then, happy-go-lucky. That's not to say that there aren't moments of sorrow, that there aren't moments of stress. That's certainly not the case. When my son was born, he failed to thrive, and he was in the emergency room and had IVs connected to him, filling him with nutrients and water, and he was in the plastic incubator. And there were still moments that I found delightful when we were in this family-sized room so that my partner and I could be there with our son. The nurse said, "I'm going to bring you some hot chocolate." You know, she didn't ask, "Oh, would you like some?" You know, she's just like, "I'm going to bring you some." Like, she could tell we had been through it. And she just brought us some hot chocolate. Just that sense of care and tenderness from her. Or even when we pulled up to the emergency room and we had this breathing but lifeless baby with us, we didn't have to search for a parking spot. My husband dropped me off at the front door with our son, and he was able to park right there. Bing, bang, boom, and we were in. It delighted me that the nurse who did his IV was able to do it right away. We had taken him to a different emergency room. They weren't specialized in pediatrics, and watching the nurses try over and over again to do his IV and fail because he was so tiny at 3 days old. But then having this other one who did specialize in pediatrics, it was just so easy. And then it was over. Like, thank you. Just those tiny moments to focus on, that even in an unfortunate situation, there can still be these tiny moments of delight, even if it's in hindsight. I'm not able to feel delight at the second, but in hindsight, I can say, I love that nurse for bringing us hot chocolate after we just had the worst day of our lives, you know? I guess I rambled on for a good long time. So that's what you missed.
That's great. I love the story. And I love the fact, you know, I've focused on, and I do life coaching. So when I work with people, I get them to focus on gratitude lists and things like that. But this is even different. It's more than a gratitude list. It's a delight list. It's something that was a highlight of your day. You know, because sometimes, you know, while I'm grateful that I woke up, I'm grateful that I'm breathing, you know, and that definitely could be a highlight of a day, but this is different. And it sounds like by doing that, even though you were going, I mean, I cannot imagine a tougher time than when your 3-day-old son is going into emergency and having to go through, you know, all of that, being in an incubator and having IVs and things like that. I mean, that's got to be so stressful and so worrying. But it sounds like, you know, obviously you weren't delighted during that time, but it sounds like it helped you get through it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It delighted me that my husband remembered to bring a box of Cheez-Its. So we had snacks at the emergency room, that he had the forethought to say, you know what, I bet we're going to be there a long time. I better bring something to eat. you know, just those little tiny moments of joy, those little tiny moments of thank you for having this snack here readily available so we don't have to go searching. We don't have to leave the room. So I think, like you said, unlike with gratitude, I feel like sometimes, for me at least, I don't want to speak for everybody. For me, when I tried to focus on what I was grateful for, it harbored some guilt because I would say to myself, I have a roof over my head. I ate three meals today. I have a car that works. I'm not sick. Why am I still so unhappy? Like, I have all of these things. I should be happy. I should be grateful for these things. If I was grateful, then I would have a different mental state, or I would, I don't know, that it was somehow a reflection on me for not appreciating those things enough, or something like that. But having a more simple framework that, if nothing delighted me today, it's not a reflection of I'm an ungrateful person, or there's something bad about me that I wasn't delighted. You know, it just means that nothing delightful happened that day. Yeah. And sometimes that's the case. Sometimes when we talk about delights, it's a short list. Other times it's a longer list. And we say, wow, yeah, today was a really great day. And we went for a family hike the other day. We saw a pileated woodpecker really up close. It was like on the opposite side of a tree that we were approaching, and it was very close to us as it flew away, which was very cool. It delighted both of us. So just those little tiny moments and holding on to them has definitely improved my overall state of mind, even through very tough situations, even through different situations that I would say, you know, are not delightful, sorrowful. I mentioned to you before that my father had passed away. He passed away in 2020 after a short battle with lung cancer. And that was a horrible time in my life. And I can say that on the last day that he was on this earth, I was delighted that the last thing he ever ate was banana cream pie. I love that. And yeah. It delighted me that he got to have something that he loved so much before he died.
Right.
Like, what more can you ask for than banana cream pie?
Yeah.
I love that. Before I was in the room with him, I was the one holding his hand as he passed. And I love that maybe 15 minutes before that happened, we were laughing. We were laughing. We were joking. We were watching TV. Mm. And, you know, then everything changed. But I'm so glad I had that moment with him.
Yeah.
It delighted me the way that the nurses treated my mother. I had to go get her from her home and bring her to see my dad. And just the gentleness and tenderness that these nurses interacted with my mom. Her husband had just passed away. They were just so wonderful. And that delighted me. It delighted me that at his funeral service, as they were burying his ashes, we heard a cardinal chirping. That's our family emblem. That delighted me.
Wow, that's special. There,
even though I was in the worst acute grief I've ever felt, he is the first person that was close to me that I've ever lost. I had never felt grief the way that I was feeling grief. And I could still point out these little moments that were delightful. Hearing the cardinal delighted me.
And so at the end of each of those days, as you went through that journey of transition of your father and grieving and things like that, you still got together with your husband and talked about the delights of the day.
Well, my husband and I actually hadn't met before my father passed away. That was just on my own. But this is a practice that I've been doing for years, and that I attribute to my time in Iceland and all that I experienced there and all that I took with me since.
Right. So just harking back to that Iceland trip, I just wanted to touch on a couple of things there. What was it like for you to go to those places, it was almost like you were sharing an experience with those people that you met, some of them briefly, like the guy at the airport having a cigarette, and he's, okay, I got to go. And, you know, I'm assuming you may never seen him again, right? But what was it like for you when you got to those places?
Yeah, and for that gentleman, I didn't even get his name. I got the story, and then he took off, so I didn't even have time to ask him, like, wait, what's your name? But I did. I felt a connection to him when I was there, right in the middle of the island. You can't miss it. It's this crater from a volcano, and it's covered in this neon red lava debris. And you can climb it. There's little signs that have, different cultural facts or natural history. And when I got to the top of it and I just looked out over this beautiful place, I felt very connected to him, this stranger. And I said to myself, wow, I feel really happy here. Like, yeah. I can understand why he felt happy here. It's so beautiful. And if this was a place, a special place for him and his family to go camping, and maybe he went here as a kid with his family, and then later as an adult, he went there with his friends. He shared that same place, but with new people. I could see why. I could see why that brought him happiness. When I found the basketball courts for the gentleman who said he felt really happy playing basketball in his youth. And I just tried to picture him playing basketball there. When I went there, there was not a soul to be seen. I don't know if it was because it was in the summer, and so maybe the kids were on summer break, but there wasn't a single person to be seen. I was walking around by myself and just trying to picture him playing basketball there. When I found the woman's childhood farm, it had long been abandoned and became kind of a weird dumping ground. So when I was looking for it, and of course there's no road sign for this childhood farm, it's not on the map, but the woman who I had interviewed, she had written down the names of some towns that were close by. And so I was in this gas station, and the woman at the gas station, she said that she could bring me directly there, but I had to wait until her shift was over. So I'm like, not a problem. I'll hang out. They had little tables and chairs. And one guy sat down with me. He said, so-and-so, the woman behind the counter, said, you're looking for Midmore. Like, are you, what's that called? Are you a picker? And I was like, a picker? I don't think I know what you mean. And he's like, you know, like one of those people who go through junkyards and they pick out antiques and then they refurbish them or sell them or whatever. I was like, no, I'm not one of those people. And he's like, oh, then why are you going there? And I was like, oh, because a woman told me that her happiest memories happened there. And he was just like, okay, like really confused, furrowed brow, really confused. And he said, okay, well, it's kind of a junkyard now. And I was, okay, it doesn't matter to me. I don't care what it looks like. I just want to get there and see it. And sure enough, it had just like massive, massive amounts of junk, like a junkyard. And you could see the barn was still up, but it was full of plastic doodads and metal doodads. I had no idea what they were used for, but I could imagine if I did have some industrial chic themed bar that I was opening up and I needed some decor for the walls, you know, like at Cracker Barrel or TGI Fridays, they have stuff all over the wall to decorate them. I could imagine I could go there and just get a bunch of free stuff to decorate this industrial chic bar. But alas, I was not there for that. And I just took some pictures and then went on to my next location. So, I encountered lots of different people. And each time that I did make it to a place, I would say, yes, I did feel connected to those people. And I felt like I tried to imagine myself in their shoes, what it felt like to be them. And I was, when I went to the public pool, they let me in to the public pool. You know, they didn't make me pay or anything. I'm like, I'm literally just going to go walk around, take some notes and leave. And they made me put little booties on my shoes, but they let me in. And as I was walking around the pools, I was just, I was trying to imagine which pool was this father and son in when the son dove into the pool for the first time? Because it was a, you know, a hefty place. They had indoor pools, outdoor pools. There was a kids section, but then more of like a swimming lane section as well. I don't think the kid was diving into the kiddie pool. So I was trying to picture like, where were they when this happened? But then I also didn't want to stick around just in case they showed up, because I didn't want him to think that I was like trying to stalk him and that I showed up to the place that he said he goes with his son regularly. Yeah. And a lot of those places, they're just kind of basic places. You know, they're not, I mean, Vesmaniar was a very beautiful place. But I don't think of camping as like this extraordinary thing. You know, he didn't say, oh, on my wedding day at Vesmaniar. You know, he just said going camping with his friends and family. So, yeah. So I guess to answer your question, yes, I felt like I was, I could almost witness their happy memory taking place. Certainly when I went to the cafe where that couple had a nice dinner, I also had a nice dinner there, and it was very good. It was very good. And I felt very happy there.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like you got a lot of happiness out of every place that you went to. So what was the inspiration behind, this is unusual. What was the inspiration behind, I'm just going to ask people where they had a happy time and I'm going to go and visit that. Like what, where did that come from?
Yeah. So people do have asked me this, and I mean, I will preface that I'm not a planner. I don't like to plan. And so planning out to say, oh, I'm going to go here, and I'm going to go here and say, I'm going to spend this amount of time in this one place, and then I'm going to go on to the next. That's not my cup of tea. My older sister, when she turned 30, she did a similar trip in that she went around Europe, but she went to visit all of her friends. So she had all of these international friends. She worked for a long time in an English language school in Boston, and then worked at Harvard and George Washington University. And so she met a lot of international people. And as a family, because my sister was a foreign exchange student and so was I, we also hosted exchange students. And so we kept in contact with them. So my sister made this very beautiful itinerary of all of these different locations, who she was meeting, even the times that her trains were going to leave or what planes, and then what the number of the plane was, the contact information for the people that she was meeting. She put all of this information into a beautiful 3-ring binder that had color-coded tabs. And it also had the time difference for the different places that she was going to be in case my parents wanted to try and contact her, what time would it be in these different locations. So when I went on my adventure turning 30, my parents falsely expected the same kind of thing out of me. And then my mother even sent me an email asking if I wasn't sharing information with her, if I was like withholding information about what I was doing, because it just didn't seem normal that I would just go there willy-nilly without any kind of plan or any contact. I didn't have any contacts there. I didn't know a single person in Iceland. So, you know, it just felt like, is there something you're not telling us? Like, they have hikes that you can go on and they're organized and they have tour guides and things like that. But that, again, wasn't my jam, I guess. I'm more of an improviser. I like to be spontaneous, and I also like there to be room to change my mind. That's also why I went by myself, because I didn't want to go with another person and have to consult with them about where we should go next or what we should see next, what we should do next. And I wanted it to all be my own decision. And if I decide, oh, I don't want to go to this place, or I want to spend a little bit more time here before I move on, that's my decision. And yeah, I wanted that flexibility. And I had a great time. I mean, there was some inclement weather that was unpleasant. And sometimes I was walking 5 or 6 hours without a ride before somebody picked me up. A lot of the roads were remote, so many of these memories didn't happen in Reykjavik proper, so there weren't a lot of cars passing by. And so I ended up walking for hours at a time. And then at night, oh my gosh, even though I was there in June, July, and the beginning of August, it was still very cold, very, very cold. And there were some nights I was doing hundreds, I mean, literally hundreds of crunches inside of my sleeping bag in order to build up my core heat to stay warm. And that was definitely not delightful. But all of the different people that I encountered, some of the rides that I got were just so surprising. One time I was picked up by a milkman who was in his milk collecting truck. And so and he didn't speak English, but I said, like, Egelstouter, which is where I was trying to go. And he's like, Egelstouter, yo, 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 yo. And so I'm like, all right, I'm getting into this milk truck. But in order to get to Egelstouter, he stopped at all of these farms along the way and picked up these big canisters of milk from these farms and then went on to the next place. But I was in a nice warm truck when it was like windy and cold and rainy. So didn't bother me to spend a little bit extra time and see all of these cute farms along the way. I was picked up by a French family in a camper. I was picked up by a tour bus that was off duty but was heading to its hub. And I wasn't the only hitchhiker in the bus. There were like 3 other hitchhikers in the bus. He just picked them all up and said, I'm going to Hoffman. I'm like, great, that's where I'm headed to. So everybody was headed to Hoffman that day. the different stories that I have from all of these in-between people too, not just the people whose memories I collected, but all of the people in between who joined me in some way in getting there or sharing an experience with me. 2 tourists from Vienna, 2 young women who were traveling together, pulled over and they said, no, we can't take you to where you're going, but we're going to go see this waterfall and you can come with us and we'll bring you right back to this exact spot. Okay. It doesn't get me to where I'm going, but that doesn't matter because the adventure is in the journey and not the destination.
Did you have any fear before you were going? I mean, this is pretty unknown. You're just about 30-year-old woman heading off and not really knowing. Did you have fear or what were you feeling before you left, when you made this decision and said, okay, I'm going?
Yeah, so I did a little bit of research about crime rates, which in Iceland, they're very, very low. Iceland is also at the top of the World Happiness Index. Every year they have not necessarily the highest scores, but they're close to the top all the time. They have really great social structures and things like that. One thing that I did look up, because again, I feel like it always happens at night when I'm about to fall asleep and then I have this epiphany of something and I thought like, oh no, like, do they have predatorial animals that I need to be worried about? And so then, I Googled wildlife of Iceland and their top predator is the snow fox, a teeny tiny little thing. So that's their like top land. They have whales that are, in the water, but most of the animals that I saw, I did see a snow fox twice. They're very skittish. They're more like snow cat. They're like teeny tiny, fluffy things, and they're very skittish. Were the sheep. I saw lots of sheep everywhere. And one time when I was sleeping in Best Money Art, camping out, I woke up. I kind of found this hidden away alcove cave kind of thing situation that I took shelter in. And when I woke up, there were three sheep in there with me, surprisingly. When I woke up, I scared them to death. They scared me to death. I scared them to death. So I did have a little bit of fear, but I also trusted myself because this wasn't my first rodeo. It wasn't the first time that I had traveled to a country where I didn't speak the language. It was the first time I was traveling to another country and nobody was expecting me. Like when I went as a foreign exchange student, I was greeted by the exchange program managers or directors and brought to a host family who was expecting me. But I was also 18 at the time, so much younger. When I was in grad school, I made my way to school. They were expecting me, but I had to find my own accommodations and things like that. And made my way to Catalonia, Spain, where I worked on an organic rice farm / bird sanctuary and somehow made it there. And along the way, I just learned that when a situation turned unsafe, I was able to get myself out. I was able to get help. And luckily, English is a very widely spoken language. And even if not everybody speaks the language, somebody will. Somebody will speak enough to help me in some way. So I learned over a period of time of these experiences backpacking through Florida, but also I had moved in the United States quite a bit and I moved by myself. And I was living in Minnesota. I had moved there and made a whole new network. I moved to Wyoming where I met my now husband and I moved there on my own and made my own network. I'm blessed to be a very outgoing person. But through all of these experiences, I did get lost sometimes. There were situations where I didn't know where I was or I was lost or was around somebody that I thought was an unsafe person and needed to get out of their presence. And because those situations happened, I was able to navigate them well enough to survive to this day. I built up my own self-trust that if I was lost again, if I didn't encounter a creepy person, if I did find myself, I don't know. I think the most scared that I was when it was raining. It was raining very hard and I was getting very wet and I was worried about finding a safe and dry place to camp for the night. Because like I said, I didn't have a tent. I just had my tarp that I would roll up like a burrito in. And that was the time that I felt the most afraid, because when you're cold, you might be uncomfortable, but when you're wet and cold, that's where things become deadly. And it was very cold, even though it was summer. So that was the one time that I felt nervous for my safety, but it didn't have to do with other people or predatory animals. It had to do with the weather. But luckily, the rain did stop. And all of my stuff that was in my backpack was dry, so I was able to change into dry clothes before I went to bed, went to sleep in my sleeping bag. And then the next day, it was a beautiful sunny day, so I was able to dry all of my wet clothes. I was able to hang them on my backpack and just let them air dry as I backpacked and hiked. So it worked out in my favor. But let's say hypothetically, things were very dire. It wasn't like I was incapable of staying in a hotel. It wasn't like I was incapable of, you know, seeking shelter in a restaurant, which I also did from time to time when the weather was very bad and I didn't want to be wet. I would just hang out for hours while my shoes dried or my socks dried. And I just stayed warm, sipping a cup of coffee or multiple cups of coffee and waited for the weather to pass. I did that a couple of times. So I would say, yes, there definitely was some some fear, but I also had self-trust. And and then because I made it through another adventure, I trust myself even more that when I go on whatever next adventure again, that I'll be able to make it through another time. Not that I have any solo travel trips planned anytime soon when I have a baby, but you never know, you know, when I'm older and retired and want to have another sense of adventure someday.
Yeah. I hope you never lose that sense of adventure. Even with your baby, you can have lots of great adventures with kids. We're getting towards the end of the podcast, and I told you I was going to ask you this. If there was, and I do it to all my, it's become something that I just do in every podcast now. If there was something that you could leave the listeners today with that would make them be just a little bit happier, and I always say 1% happier, if everybody was 1% happier after listening to the podcast at the end of the year, they'd be 50% happier, which would be a whole lot happier. So if there was one thing that you could leave with the listeners that would make them just a little bit happier today, one tip, what would that be?
Yeah, I think I would tell them to index those moments that brought them joy that day, those little moments of delight. You know, I think that when I was at my most unhappy, that I kept looking for happiness in these dreams. Like once these dreams happened, once I found my dream job, once I found my forever love, then I'll find happiness. That's when I'll be happy. And because I haven't found those things, I'm not happy, and that's why. And when I shifted my focus to just asking myself what, and it didn't have to make me happy, just what delighted me, even if it was 1 second, 2 seconds long, that moment of delight, over time, now over time, that practice has now created this neural pathway pattern, right? So now during the day, not only do I index those little happiest moments at the end of the day, but I look for them. When something happens, I make note of it in my head, say, oh, I better tell my husband about that when we do delights tonight. And so I'm more apt to notice those little moments. Instead of just having a pleasant interaction with the cashier at the grocery store, now I think to myself, oh, wow, that was delightful. And I have this mental note of that moment of delight instead of just passing through it and not noticing it. So I would say, like, start cataloging those moments throughout the day. Find delight in not having bills in your mailbox that day. Find delight in not having to wait in line at the gas station, that you were able to just pull up to a pump or whatever little thing it is. Those moments are there. And I think holding on to them is a key to finding lifelong happiness.
Yeah, I love it. It really is, because it makes us aware of when we are happy. And, you know, to go back into the whole metaphysical thing, what we focus on grows, right? Mm-hmm. And definitely that's what happens in our brain, because you mentioned it, the neural pathways, you start getting wired that way. So now you're like automatically wired to find those delightful things in life. This is something I'm going to use. I love it. I'm going to steal it. I'm going to use it, you know, because I love it. I think that's great. I've never thought of it that way. It's always been gratitude lists and things like that. But now it's going to be like a daily delight list. It's perfect. Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. I'm glad I can spread the good word of delight.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. I love it. Thank you. So if somebody wants to get a hold of you or find out more information about you, you do have 3 lovely books out. One's a children's book. I'm going to be looking into that because I have a 2-year-old grandson. So I'll be looking for your children's book. I hope it's available in Canada. So how does somebody get a hold of Anne-Marie Wells?
Yeah, you can find me on my website, annemariewellswriter.com. I'm on all the social medias at Amory Wells Writer, and I also have a Substack at Amory Wells. You can find my children's book. You can find a video of me reading it for Wyoming PBS. If you Google Mommy, Why Am I a Bird, Amory Wells, then it'll pop right up. So
Great.
You can find me reading it there. I'm actually not sure if it's in print anymore because there was one first edition, you know, first printing through the University of Coimbra Press. But I don't know if they've ever made second printings or anything like that. And you can find it online. There's a PDF version of it online that is free to access through the university's website now. So I'm not sure actually how you can find the children's book, but then my published poetry collections, they're available on my website through the different publishers' websites. And actually my publisher of Survived By just sold out of my book again. This is like the third or fourth time that they sold out. So right now it's only available through Amazon, but they'll have more copies soon. And if you do buy through the publisher, you're supporting a small business, but then you also get cool swag when you order through the publisher. So you don't pay for shipping. Shipping's included in the price and you get like cool little souvenirs, and it's packaged really nicely with like wax seals, and you get a personalized note from the publisher. It's pretty cool. So and like I said, I'm on social media at Amory Wells Writer. Happy to take additional questions, or if you try out the delights at night, you can tell me how it goes. I would love to hear from anybody who tries it out and see what they think.
Yeah. That's fantastic. And of course, as always, I will put Anne-Marie's contact info in the description of the podcast. Again, thank you so much for being on. Such an honor. Man, this is my delight for today. It's so far it's been my highlight for the day is to speak with you. So tonight I will be bringing up the interview with Anne-Marie Wells as one of the delights of my day, and I'm sure there will be
more.
Oh, I'm
so glad.
Yes, thank you. This is Charles Davis, Be Happy Podcast. As always, I ask that you go down below and hit subscribe. We can use more subscribers to the podcast, and it keeps wonderful stories and beautiful people coming in to you on a weekly basis. And please check out Anne-Marie's. And we're waiting for Happy Iceland, okay? Mm-hmm. So all your listeners, let's focus on Happy Iceland. Let's visualize that there's going to be an amazing publisher, and this is going to get published and more.
Yes, I can't wait to send you a copy, Charles.
I'm looking forward to it. Well, please keep in touch because I want this whole story. I know there's way, way more to it than you could tell us in an hour, but I'm looking forward to the whole story.
Yeah, I'd love to be a repeat guest.
Please, we will definitely do that. You're on my list for repeat guest. Yes. Awesome. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful week and be happy.